Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Generally at initiations they recite the 10 offenses and explain them. So we're just going to do that. The chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is the Yuga Dharma. It is said that Krite Tadjayato Vishnum, that in the Satyuga the method is meditation of self-realization is meditation. Krite Tadjayato Vishnum. And in the age of Tretiyam Yajito Mukai. In that age they're performing sacrifices. Dwarpayam Paricharyam Kalotadari Kirtana. And in Dwarpa Yuga, temple worship is recommended. And in Kali Yuga, it is the chanting of the holy names. And therefore, initiation is principally initiation into learning how to chant the holy name. One can chant the holy name without offense, then one becomes liberated, and if one can come to the platform of Shudanam, and then Bhavanam and Premnam, to chant the holy name in different states of consciousness. So because our consciousness depends upon our understanding, and our understanding depends upon our practical activities, therefore, we have to learn what practically to do, develop the proper understanding, so we can develop the proper mood and consciousness. And therefore, there are 10 offenses to teach us how we can properly develop, come to the proper activities, proper understanding, and ultimately the proper mood of devotion to Krishna by chanting Hare Krishna. First offense is to blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives in propagating the holy name of the Lord. Of course, it's not recommended to go out of our way to criticize anyone, but especially those who are preachers. The idea is that whatever we're favorable towards, we develop those qualities for better or worse. And whatever we're unfavorable towards, we more or less reject those qualities for better or worse. Therefore in Bhagavad Gita Krishna says, Savasya Chaham Ridhi Sanivishto Matat Smritira Jnanam Apoanam Cha. For the devotee, Krishna, Krishna helps the devotee remember him and forget about Maya by giving him understanding what is Krishna consciousness. And to the non-devotee, Krishna helps the non-devotee forget Krishna and only remember Maya and conceive of things in such a way that one becomes convinced that that is actually the real purpose of life, is to forget Krishna and remember Maya. Similarly, if we associate with devotees in a favorable way, then we develop all the good qualities that the devotees have. If we associate with the devotees in an unfavorable way, then we lose all the good qualities that the devotees have, or we won't have the opportunity to develop them. We should understand that a devotee means an instrument for Krishna, and a non-devotee means an instrument for the material energy, illusion. There may be different levels of devotion. Generally, it's divided up into first class, second class, third class devotion, Uttama Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, Kanishtha Adhikari. Sometimes it's divided up into different levels of devotion, Adau, Shraddha, Tata, Sadhusanga, Tya, Vajna Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, Tatonish, Anartha Nivritti, Syat, Tata Nishta, Tato Bhavas, Tata Prema Dhudunchati, Sada Kanam Prena, Tera Prena, Sudura Brava Bhavet Krama. Therefore, there are different progressive levels from Shraddha all the way up to Prema, and a devotee is supposed to be trying to cultivate higher levels of devotion progressively from Shraddha or from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha, to Bhajana Kriya, to Anartha Nivritti, to Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Prema, and finally Bhavan, and finally Prema. And to progress, to go from one level to another, we have to associate with devotees and learn from them how to go from one level to the next. But if we criticize the devotees who are especially on a higher level than we are, then the result is that our progress towards the higher levels will be impeded. Therefore, instead of worrying about blasting the devotees, we should glorify the good qualities of the devotees. We should also understand if we perceive difficulty or faults in the devotees, not that we should ignore them or claim that they're actually good qualities. Wouldn't that be a good idea? If we think someone has a good quality that's actually a bad quality, we see a devotee smoking and we think, well, that's a nice devotional activity for Krishna. You know, all glories to smoking. And then we start smoking too, in imitation of the devotee, that will not be very favorable towards our devotional service. So we should know what's to be done, what's not to be done. And for those who are doing the right thing, we should appreciate what they're doing and try to follow in their footsteps. And for those who are doing the wrong thing, we should understand that this is the working of the illusory energy and learn from them what not to do, but not do it ourselves. Second offense is consider the names of the demigods like Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. As I mentioned before, in Kali Yuga, we think we don't have difficulty with this particular offense because we don't believe in the demigods. Therefore, why would we think Vishnu to be on the same level or the demigods to be equal or better than Krishna when we don't believe that they exist? Then again, we don't believe that Krishna exists to a certain extent. So we have no problem with this because we don't believe in any of these people, Vishnu, Shiva, Brahma, they're all to us. We may have some faith, some idea in the back of our minds, but we don't really have complete faith that they're existing. Therefore, we don't really care whether one's better than the other. If Brahma could make us happy, we'd surrender to him. Whoever gives us what we want, we surrender to them. But Vishnu is different. He's not our boss that we're working for. He's not our parents providing for our education or our giving us an allowance. Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and ultimately he's the only person and his associates, of course, that we have an eternal relationship with. Everyone else, whatever relationship we may have with them, will only be temporary. And our very identity is connected with Krishna, and therefore to think that Lord Vishnu or other expansions of Krishna are equal to, or the demigods are equal to them, or our movie stars, or our actors, or the bank teller, that they're all equal, then we won't be able to appreciate what is our relation with Krishna and how we're supposed to relate to others according to that relation with Krishna, not that we relate with Krishna according to our relationship to others. Not that we accept Krishna because our parents tell us to, and we reject Krishna when our parents tell us to reject him. No, we accept anyone when Krishna tells us to accept them, and we reject anyone who Krishna clearly tells us to reject. Things should be seen from the point of view of Krishna rather than to the point of view of our mental conceptions. Arjuna he didn't want to fight against his relatives, but when he understood who Krishna was, then he fought to the best of his ability and actually killed his relatives. Of course, Krishna will not tell us to kill our relatives. They're not worthy of, generally they're not as powerful as Bhishma Dev or Karna or anyone else. I don't think we have any Kshatriyas who are our relatives, nor is there going to be a battlefield Kurukshetra in the near future. But we have to know how to deal with people according to how Krishna would like us to. Often it's different from the way we think it is, according to our preconceptions. In other words, in this age, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is really not trying to kill anyone, because if he had to kill the demons, there would be no one left, including ourselves. Therefore, generally, he's trying to give people love of God, which is a little different from killing them. So similarly, we have to use our intelligence how to give people love of God, not to so much to reject them. But if we're not capable of doing that, and we may get bad association, if we deal intimately with them, then we may just have to neglect them for some time until we become empowered enough or wise enough, intelligent enough, how to deal with people to help them in their path of Krishna consciousness. Did anyone invite them? They seem pretty convinced that we're not supposed to be here and they are. The third offense is to minimize or disobey the orders of the spiritual master. So the spiritual master may appear to be an ordinary personality, but what makes the spiritual master or anyone for that in that regard extraordinary is that they're carrying the order of Krishna. Of course, they're also supposed to be following the orders of Krishna, but they're also carrying the orders of Krishna to their disciple. Ultimately, only Krishna is completely perfect, and of course, one who's in the disciple succession from Krishna, as much as they follow Krishna's instructions, coming in disciple succession, to that extent they become perfect. So sometimes it may appear that the spiritual master is not perfect, but if we follow his instructions coming into simple succession, then we'll become perfect. So it's for the disciple, it's not so much that whether the spiritual master is perfect or not. First of all, we generally don't know what perfection is. We take things that are external as perfection. One time one boy walked into a class and saw the speaker wearing glasses. And he exclaimed out loud that I thought the spiritual master was supposed to be perfect, but now I see he's wearing glasses. So now I reject him. The opposite was, one devotee told me, in Russia, during the Stalin era, they were running out of people to annihilate or inoculate, whatever they call it. Liquidate. And they had a quota. The secret police had a quota to liquidate a certain number of people every month. So they decided, especially in places like Lithuania where this devotee's parents were living, they decided that anyone who had glasses on must have been reading a lot. And because they were reading a lot, they were too intellectual and they should be liquidated. So anyone they saw had glasses on, they would knock on their door in the middle of the night. They arrest them, put them into a train going to Siberia, and after a week or so, without any food or water, anyone who survived the train ride would get out and they'd be able to start their life in Siberia. That's why Siberia has people. Otherwise, generally, Siberia wouldn't have very many people in it. But there's a lot of people with glasses. So if you go to Siberia and you see a lot of people with glasses, you know what? In any case, perfection is not something external. How well we can sing, how well we can recite verses, how well we pronounce them. The actual perfection is how much we've understood the orders coming into simple succession and are trying to follow them and convey them to others. The fourth offense is to blaspheme the Vedic literature or literature which is in pursuance of the Vedic version. If we read the Vedas, we may think we've understood many things, but generally we've understood very little of it. Even Bhagavad Gita, to understand that Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, what it means to become joyful, would be quite an advancement for us. If we were walking around all day long joyful, and no moroseness, no hankering, no lamentation, and we saw everyone equally, the person who steps on us, on our foot, as the person who gives us a maha, we see them all equally. Not so easy. And therefore, Bhagavad Gita gives us a process by which we can come to the Brahma Bhuta stage and beyond that to the Bhakti stage. Therefore, we shouldn't think we shouldn't easily think that we've understood everything in the Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of the other Vedic literatures. Now, in the Vedic literature, like Srimad Bhagavatam, there are many things that are completely beyond our conception or our perception. They sound fantastic, such as there are planets in this universe where there are trees 150,000 kilometers high. Think about that for a second. And that on these mountains there are trees so big, 10,000 yojanas, 80,000 miles high, and they have fruits on them. For instance, there's a mango tree that has fruits the size of elephants. So think about that, a mango fruit the size of an elephant. Solve all your eating problems for a while. Hopefully, especially when they're ripe. And they fall down. Hopefully you're not underneath when you're walking. And they form rivers of mango juice that flow to the ocean of milk. And then there's other trees, like there's jambu fruit trees and jackfruit trees, and they also fall down. They fall rivers of jambu fruit juice, and when they all come to the ocean of milk, by the heating of the sun, they form gold. And the demigods come and collect gold for their ornaments there. We hear these things, and they sound quite extraordinary. Obviously, they are quite extraordinary for this place. The difficulty is we actually believe that this earth is more or less very special. In one sense, it is special, but it's not as special as we may think, that it is not the only place in the universe where there are people, and this is not the highest of evolution of human beings, and there can't be any trees bigger than the redwood trees in California. It just wouldn't be fair. There can't be any mountains bigger than the Himalayas, because we haven't seen them, so they can't exist. Unless we acknowledge them, that they might as well not be there. And so many things. So we can't believe that there's something beyond our experience, like mountains bigger than the mountains we presently perceive. How are we going to be able to understand or accept or believe in that there are whole universes beyond this universe, or that there's spiritual planets? If we can't accept the description of material planets greater than the ones that we're presently on, then how can we accept that there are other kinds of planets called spiritual planets? The idea is that we don't have to blindly accept that there are planets like Siddhaloka, Indraloka, because we have no experience of those things. We haven't met anyone from there that I know of. We haven't been there that we can remember. We can't perceive them currently, so we don't have to blindly accept them. Nor should we blindly reject them. There's no reason to reject them just because we haven't perceived them. that they exist may be intellectually understood, that there are many planets we can see in the universe that we have no experience of, so there might exist, they might not exist. Ultimately, it has no influence whatsoever on our devotional service unless we blindly accept them or blindly reject them. It doesn't really matter if there is a Indraloka or not. Whether if there was no Indraloka, we can still perform devotional service. And if there is an Indraloka, it doesn't really matter to us. We're not on Indraloka. So what does it care? What do we care whether there is an Indraloka or not? In the sense it won't help our devotional service. Whether Indra is chanting his rounds or not won't make any difference whether we chant our rounds or not. But these descriptions are there just to give us some understanding that the Bhagavatam is not blind. It is not that we believe that there is a spiritual world and there's nothing in between. In any case, we shouldn't criticize the Vedic literature, nor should we blindly follow it. What we should do is try to understand it, especially the important parts of the Vedas that deal with pure devotional service that's within our means of performance, so that we can gradually purify ourselves, and perhaps one day we'll be able to perceive the heavenly planets, and perhaps no. But at least we'll be able to perceive what's actually going on this planet. For instance, that Krishna is in control at least of this planet, and that he's in control of all the living entities on this planet. Even this little bird here. The fifth offense is to consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be imagination, the glories. Of course, unless we hear so many things about the holy name, just by chanting once we can rid ourselves of more sinful activities than we've performed in so many millions of lifetimes. And we may be chanting for some time and wondering how many millions of lifetimes I've been here. Because it seems that I've been chanting a lot and it doesn't seem to be much progress sometimes. The chanting depends upon the quality of the chanting. Ahajamiel, he was chanting the name of his son Narayan for some years at least, and no effect. But when he got into the proper mood, when he was chanting Narayan, then it had a great effect. Similarly, and that when we're in the proper mood, then the chanting has a greater effect. Of course, neither Ajamil, even in complete desperation when he was chanting Narayan's name, became completely perfect at once, but at least he became pure enough to realize he had made a mistake by performing sinful activities, and therefore he took up devotional service seriously. If we haven't realized the glories of the holy name, we should understand it's not due to the fact that the glories are imagination, but it has to do something with the fact that we don't chant the holy name properly. Just like, although we may not have realized that we're not the body fully, but that doesn't mean that we are the body. It just means we haven't realized it because we don't have enough experience and realization. It is not an imagination to say that the soul is eternal and the body is temporary. That we have direct experience when we use our intelligence. Similarly, the holy name has all transcendental potencies. We may not be experiencing them fully, but if we chant more and more attentively and more in the proper consciousness or feelingly, then the result is gradually the glories will be experienced by us. And to give some mundane, the next offense, give some mundane interpretation of the holy name. One famous poet said that the holy name has a potency because it helps us hyperventilate. That was his understanding of the potency of the holy name. When you chant, you breathe more. Which for some of us, it may be true. It may help our breathing. But that's not the full extent of the glories of the holy name. The glories of the holy name are there. It has its potency because it's Krishna appears when we chant sincerely the holy name. The next offense is to commit sinful activities on the strength of the holy name. In the material world, we have a tendency towards following the direction of our senses and mind, and sometimes we may fall victim to their impulses, their demands, but we shouldn't think that the holy name is the means of counteracting the sinful activities that we're performing, and therefore I can voluntarily and freely commit all kinds of sinful activities and just rely upon the holy name to protect me from the reactions. Krishna is not so foolish. He won't encourage us to perform sinful activities. The reaction to the sinful activity or for the offense of committing sin on the strength of chanting may even be greater than the reaction for the sinful activities we're trying to avoid. The eighth offense is to consider the glories of chanting Hare Krishna to be one of the auspicious ritualistic activities offered in the Vedas as fruitive activities of karmakanda. If we think by chanting the holy name we'll get some wealth, we'll get some prestige, we'll get some power, we'll get some mystic power, we'll get something, then we really haven't understood what the purpose of the holy name is. It's not to improve our material condition. Our material condition is temporary, and in any situation, to some extent, any material condition is miserable. Therefore, the chanting Hare Krishna is meant to give us another realm of experience, spiritual experience. Mixing material hankering for material experience with hankering for spiritual experience is not a good idea. Kolavekar Shridha, he was making less than the minimum wage today, selling banana leaves, banana flowers, bananas in Bengal, where there is unlimited number of bananas everywhere. What to speak of buying bananas, you have to be careful you don't get hit by bananas as they fall from the trees. That doesn't happen very often, but there are many bananas everywhere in Bengal. But still, when he was offered by Lord Chaitanya any kind of material opulence, either lordship over the entire universe or becoming the king of all the kings, he rejected it simply for pure devotional service. Of course, Krishna probably won't offer us the same thing he offered to Kolavekar Sridhar, because we'd probably take him up on it. Really? You know, you can make me the lord of the universe? Well, what about two universes? I can switch on and off between them. We'd settle for something less. As it was said, one lady was in the forest, and she was carrying very heavy sticks on her head. Suddenly the sticks fell off her head, and because she was all alone, she cried out very sincerely, "Hey Govinda, help me." So Govinda, she was so sincere, Govinda came and said, "Yes, what can I do for you?" And she explained her situation, that all these heavy sticks had fallen and now she had no one to help her, so please help her. So Govinda picked up all the sticks, placed them on her head, and said, "Anything else I can do for you?" She said, "No, my lord, you're very kind. Thank you very much." And then he disappeared. Therefore, we should know gradually what is actually desirable by not becoming too much interested in getting material gain and try to concentrate more on spiritual gain. Then the next offense is to explain the glories of the holy name to the unfaithful. Generally speaking, we like to hear ourselves talk. Therefore, we like to tell everyone what our realizations are, even if people can't understand it. So in order to help people, that's what reason why we're generally preaching, we have to explain the glories of the holy name according to what people can understand. Most people will not understand that Krishna is chasing the gopis in Vrindavan, and therefore we should worship him. most people have a hard time understanding that they're not their body. But in order to understand something about Krishna, at least the fact that we can't understand Krishna, first of all, we have to introduce the fact that people can't even understand the difference between themselves and their bodies, what to speak of who they actually are. And when they can't understand that, then we should at least explain to them that there are different good and bad things to be done in the material world, that there are at least three modes of nature: goodness, passion, ignorance, and it's better to be in goodness than in ignorance and passion. And if they can't understand that, then give them some prasadam and go to the next person. In other words, we should learn how to discriminate and explain Krishna consciousness appropriate to others. Otherwise, we may confuse ourselves by telling people inappropriately who Krishna is and what Krishna consciousness is. Then we won't be able to understand things properly ourselves. Last offense is to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy names and maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter. Our main problem, of course, explains also, is inattentiveness. So we should try to be attentive. It takes some effort, but that's how we advance. Not that the aim of our chanting is to get them our rounds done as quickly as possible, and then I can go on with my life without any feeling guilty that I haven't chanted my rounds today. That's not the main happiness in the chanting, that I don't feel guilty today because I chanted them. And no one could claim I'm not a devotee because I have the proof right here. Most of my beads are down there. So we should try to chant attentively, and then Krishna will give us intelligence. If we study Prabhupada's books and we hear this philosophy, how to chant better and better and better, and then we'll be able to give up some of our material attachments, and then gradually we'll make progress by trying to chant more attentively. These are the principal offenses, and the most important thing is attention, and to try to become Krishna's instrument, try to understand who Krishna is in the association of devotees, and that way try to become enthusiastic about our service for Krishna. Not just work, 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 but work for Krishna to please Him as He would like us to do. Then we'll make progress to understanding Krishna and to our actual selves and everyone else also. So we'll stop there. Thank you.